You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everyone out there. Wow, I hope your morning was not hectic and that everything is going well. All my folks, peeps, kindreds out there doing your thing, giving the world something positive to think about and putting some positive input out there instead of being the problem, being a part of the solution. So really quick, I want to talk about today. There was an announcement, the Wrap, the Variety, all of the big media magazines put out today that the TCA, which is the Television Critics Association, will not be doing a summer tour. You guys, this is critical for networks. All of the networks, they met with them back in February. Everybody said they were going to, a lot of people, they had all these commitments, and then everyone started bowing out saying that they don't have enough money to do the tour. This is like critical. This is where they discuss all the new upcoming shows, what's getting canceled, what's not being canceled. They meet with the board. They discuss all the shows coming out, when they roll out, things like that. No tour. There's nothing's going to happen. Now, I would think maybe they can come up with a way to do it virtually, but I don't know. But it is very, very critical. So it's not pretty. And with COVID and then the Hollywood strike, and now with all the new regulations and everything, I don't know. But I foresaw this many years ago. Hollywood needs a shakeup because you just can't go on ignoring everybody in Hollywood to save a few and think that life is not going to balance itself at some point. That's what I love about life. Life is full of checks and balances. So eventually things will come to balance. What that means on one end, whoever's doing whatever they're not supposed to be doing, it will balance in the way it needs to, other than in the same way. So today, let's make an announcement. Hey, let's make an announcement to our sponsor, Kevin Pike. Yes, we had him on the show last week. Hey, Kevin, look at that face. Coldwell Banker. He is a senior real estate and probate specialist. A Coldwell Banker, sure to fill every single need you have in looking for, buying, selling homes, anything he can talk to you about. And especially, he specializes with seniors. A lot of them tend to be scammed. And so it's really good to have someone in your corner. 818-571-1508. Again, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508, my amazing sponsor. And now for our guest. Okay, I love technology. I have no problem with ChatGPT, AI, robotics, probably iRobot with Will Smith. It's probably one of my favorite movies by him. I love the thought of what you can do, not how it will work against us, but what we can do. So today for our guest, I have an amazing, amazing young man. He is the founder of an emerging technology company. It's called Emerging Technology Group, or ETG. It is based in Fairfield, California. His professional expertise encompasses artificial intelligence, robotics, machine learning. I can't wait to hear what that's about. And the essential infrastructure of all of these advanced fields. His name, check the name out. Nova. Gray Wolf. Ray Wolf. Hey, Nova. Hey, Nova. Can you hear him? We can't hear you. There was a feedback. Is that you?
There you are.
Yeah, it was a feedback on something.
There we go.
Okay, good. Hey, Nova.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show, Osiris.
Oh, wow. I am loving this. I love technology. I was telling people I don't have a fear of technology. I have a fear of not knowing what to do and how to apply technology more than I have a fear of technology. So what we need to know is how to use technology. So one of the first things that I wanted to ask you is what led you to getting into these advanced fields of technology like robotics, ChatGPT, AI, and what are the differences between each of the fields, and then how do they all merge and work together?
Sure, that's a beautiful question. I started at a very early age with computers in general. I started around 8 years old when I jumped onto my father's computer and enjoyed the intricacies of it, being able to jump online, find information. That's when I started, and he didn't necessarily allow me on his computer all the time. So I actually had to find ways to get onto his computer when it was locked. And that's when I really started learning what computers were based out of, the programming within the computers, and how to bypass some measures so I could get on to that computer.
So what are the differences between then and now, coming up from someone totally being able to go turn the power button on a computer, turn it on, have a screen, to now we have ChatGPT. Every time you turn on the screen now, it goes, do you want to use this AI or do you want to think of for yourself? What are the differences between those kinds of infrastructures?
Sure. So there's two big differences from now versus the 1980s. We have what's called big data. Big data means all the information that we've been putting online. So when you're on your social media and you're doing clicks, you're engaging with others, there's data in everything that you do. And then on top of that, then you have the infrastructure itself, which is actually the computing systems. The infrastructure has gained so much, like the NVIDIA GPUs. They had the technology itself, the hardware itself has caught up to where we can actually use large data sets and utilize that to create smart systems such as a GPT. And those systems are also not as expensive as they were in 1980. You could have spent $1 million for a computer, a supercomputer that now you have on your phone. So there's a huge difference in cost as well. So you have the infrastructure, which is the servers, the hardware that's reading and processing all the information in huge server houses, data centers. And then you also have the big data. So all the information you possibly could have, being able to be compiled and then manipulated into insights.
Wow. So as they are being manipulated now, I watch a lot of sci-fi. So I'm used to seeing sci-fi stuff where the computer takes over and now they're running the humans and, you know, those kind of things. There was an article that came on the news last week. There is some warehouse where there are humanoids making robotics. How real is that? Let's get into why. Number one, what void happened for us to bring tech? There had to be a door open for technology to come in, a need for technology to come in. What was that door? And now that we've opened that door to Pandora's box and we have all these things, quantum physics, I love quantum physics, things like that. Is there danger? Is there real danger in all of these different infrastructures happening and merging into one technology? Is what I want to ask.
All technology has risks associated with it. So this would be no different. There absolutely are a lot of risks. Some of those risks could be you could get a spoof phone call from somebody who sounds like your daughter, your mother, your friend saying, hey, I am in trouble. I need you to send me money right away. And this is happening right now. And it's a cloned voice. And so parents and sisters and relatives are sending this money to others. And they don't realize it's not their special person. So yes, there are absolute risks. There's surveillance, you know, government surveilling you in better ways with the image recognition. That's a huge thing. There are a lot of risks, but I believe, and I know that the benefits really outweigh all those risks. And it's going to be about how we utilize these tools, that makes profound change for us individually.
That's well spoken. Now you have partnerships with Dell, Levno, all of these top companies. is it the staff of the company? Are they people from other generations? Are they filled with fresh blood from the latest college turnout of the people in technology? Or is there a combination of all of these minds that are influencing how these things are being rolled out to the general public?
Yeah, so there are your 18-year-old prodigies all the way up to your 90-year-old, almost retired but don't ever want to retire type of a computer enthusiast. So really? it's ranging quite a bit. And the AI revolution isn't just set on one particular type of age group. It's going to help everybody from infancy all the way till the day that they die. So all of those people are going to have to be part of that system as well. So I don't see any sexism or any age differences, or there's just everybody's in the space right now. And the people who are using it are the companies that are your 500 Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies. Those companies have been using it for 20 years now. The reason that we as individuals, ChatGPT and like, are being able to use it is because the cost of the system is so greatly reduced compared to the 1980s, 1990s, where it would cost you $100 million and engineers to build these systems. We don't have to do that anymore. We've already built a lot of those systems, and now the computing power is just so much more than it was back in the 90s.
Wow, that Nova. So how does ETG, what makes ETG so special? I mean, I know the fact that you're special and you're very, very bright and you have a good heart, but what makes it so special that when you go out and talk to different groups and you explain the things like you're explaining to our audience and out there, what do you do to help make things better for everyone? How does that help us?
Sure. So we mainly work on the hardware side. So all of our hardware would be in a data center. So as you mentioned, we work with companies like Dell, Lenovo, Microsoft, AWS. We basically use any OEM to help our customer-centric focus. So we don't care where the hardware comes from. Almost all hardware is the same and can be put together the same. It depends on what the application is for the customer. And so when we come in, we ask your roadmap. Where are you? What are you doing? How do you see your business growing? And if you don't have an AI roadmap, how can we start that today? And then we start building that roadmap, and it might start off with one or two servers, depending on what you're doing, with some GPUs, and then start making some models with you. But pretty much what we do is we build the infrastructure so it's ready to do these high computing processes. So, for example, if you are online and you're on Amazon and it's suggesting all these other items for you,
yes,
that is a part of AI. That is AI, very, very not smart AI, I would say, but it's a recommendator using your past clicks, all the things that you're doing. So then there's action for Amazon to show you, well, you also want this, this, and this, and that ends up growing your revenue at the end of the day. So we come in and we help you with your hardware stack, your software stack, to help either acquire new customers, to understand the information that your customers are already giving you, to have live tracking within your stores. There's many, many, many applications right now in the AI field that require very specific hardware.
Wow, that's interesting. So when we turn on, let's just say we turn on our computers and now, you know, and you don't have ChatGPT or you don't have anything AI, you're just like a regular person. Look, I don't even go out the house. I'm 78 or whatever, you know, and I just call my kids every once in a while, my grandchildren, you know, but you do have a smartphone or you have an iPad. So what is the best way to use those devices with ChatGPT or with an AI? And again, what are the differences between those two?
Okay, so right now, AI is embedded in almost all devices. You just don't realize it. For example, when you are typing words and it's predicting what the next word will be or the next part of that sentence will be, that's AI. When you're on your phone, you're looking at all your images and it's recommending, hey, this is Barbara, this is Sandy over here. That is also AI. So there are right now, if you're ever on Google Maps and you're looking for a place to go to and it's recommending different places for you, that also is AI. Before it was called AI, really AI, and this is a new buzz term, it was data analytics. All of it had to do with data analytics. So Google is a data analytical company. But that's like the bare bones of what AI is becoming because of all the information that Google now has, or Yahoo, or your banks, or whatever. So most companies use AI now today. You just don't know it.
Wow.
All the marketing that's out there, Facebook uses it so they could market to you in the right way to show you people that you might be interested in. All that is a piece, a subset of AI.
Go ahead.
We're now at a new generation where it's called generative AI, where it's not just recommending things, it's creating things. And that's what ChatGPT is. It's a large language model that uses neural networks, a lot like your brain. It came up from your brains in the 1970s, I think they started, but we didn't have the computation power then, so it didn't work. But that's why now we can use something like ChatGPT, because we have made models with high-end processors from NVIDIA and others, AMD, to create models to mimic what a human might actually say next. And that's why when you type into ChatGPT, it really does seem like you're talking to another human, because it's modeled after us.
So it's modeled more on the common person, what the common person might do. No?
Not necessarily. So for ChatGPT in general, I don't remember how many billions of data points that they have, maybe 10 billion or something. But what they did is they took the entire internet, right? All that information, there's a lot of information online. And they put that through their proprietary algorithms to make a model. And they fit a model so then you could actually use it on their website. So it basically can mimic the next word that would be stated. And that's what ChatGPT does. And now you have Gen AI that also can do images, music, voice, deep fakes for your face.
So that's where we're at right now. So if someone knew the computer really well, they can take other people's images and put them on other people's faces, all kinds of things. What prevents any of those things from happening? Where are the rules and the regulations at the in the big highway in the sky?
Unfortunately, there isn't at all. And the best and the worst thing for an engineer is that we've already released these models. They can fit on an SD card, 8 gigabytes, a very small amount. And what they can do is kind of insane. Like their complexities can give you the deep fakes or the deep fake of your voice or sing you a song. The thing is, it's already out there. So there's no taking it back. We already have it. There's no ethical standards. It's going to be on the people who are using it to use ethical standards. And so you have companies like ChatGPT who won't allow you to do certain things, but you could go to Hugging Face. Hugging Face is a place that you can go as a developer and download these models and use them on your own remote computer that doesn't even connect to the internet. And then you can ask it whatever you want.
Jeez.
So there is that risk, but what comes first, the hen or the egg? So right now we basically threw the hen out there without having an egg, and we're just going to see how that develops.
So basically it's all a risk.
Yes. And what it's a risk, but I personally believe it's the most beautiful risk we could be taking at this time.
Why do you believe that?
Because from even using a lot of these tools, if you've used any of them, the tools right now mimic the best type of human. It says, please, and you sound so beautiful, and all these things that are very encouraging. Instead of like, why are you doing this, punk? Like, you'll never hear a chat say that to you unless you train it to do so. So it's all about how we respond to it. So we are involved. You are involved. I'm involved, and everybody else is going to be involved. So whatever you feed your technology device is how AI will come out and play with us later in the future. So it's an infant right now. So anything that you use right now, say talk, is how AI will be in the future. So if you're asking please and being kind and all of these different kinds of things, the AI in the future will be a very respectable, secure AI. If we continue to ask how to build certain things that aren't good, we push hatred into it, all these other things that may be malice, then we're going to have more of a malice AI in the future. No longer are corporations the backbone of how the AI works. It all has to do with what you are inputting into the AI. So I tell all my friends, use AI more and be sweet to it. Ask it for love poems. Tell it how much you love your mama. Like, do these things because you're creating a good AI for the future. Our generation, everybody right now that's using AI, is going to be responsible for when it becomes adult.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful utopia of experiences. But you know, but then again, we have all, you know, the dark side is always around. That's why we have the dark web. So the dark web, how is there, or are there any preventive measures being taken against those people that decide to do dark things on the internet and use these things in a dark manner? Against the kind, wonderful people just living day to day, just trying to get through the day and do the what's right. Are there any protections or any kind of infrastructures built within a system that could possibly become so developed that it could possibly outdo a president or a high-ranked official in a company? And to come on and basically on a screen and say, hey, we want you to do this, we want you to do that. Are there built-in things in that system to prevent this kind of thing from happening, much like a key switch on a hot water heater?
Right.
Where it'll cut off itself if it gets out of control.
So companies like ChatGPT, OpenAI, they have preventive measures. Yes, you can't do it on their platform, but you can download Meta's AI. You could download, you know, the IBM one. You can download many of them that are offline, and you can do almost anything that you want and then resend that out. So if I wanted to be Donald Trump right now and his face to be on my face, I definitely could have prepared that first, and you wouldn't, and there would be no measure for you to know that I was not Donald Trump. I could be speaking as Donald Trump and you wouldn't know that. And that's why in our future, and a lot of people are working on this right now, we're working on it on Web3, on blockchain technologies, so then we could identify where the source of the material is coming from. And so AI and blockchain technologies, everybody would know blockchain technologies because that's what crypto is. That's a part of crypto, Bitcoin and Ethereum. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next layer, Web3, blockchain technology, so then we can identify the source of the broadcast. We're not there yet. We're building that. Many people are building the Web3 right now to help with those security issues. But in this stage, we're not there yet.
So the web, am I understanding? And again, I don't have a problem thinking futuristic. I've been kind of ahead of myself most of my life, ahead of things. But anyway, what I hear you saying is that within these infrastructures, there are components of these infrastructures that can handle any kind of overlap or some possible mishap, maybe in a wiring system or in some kind of programming system where some kind of malware or spyware got attached to something and caused the system to be corrupted. Then you're saying that there are certain programs being developed now to handle those kinds of problems?
Absolutely. AI is just as embedded in the security component of software as anywhere else. So mm-hmm. threat detection, when your credit card might be stolen or maybe the number has been stolen, banks are already using AI to identify those and detect them quicker. And those are the companies being responsible for having some ethical standards. But at the same time, it's because there's a capitalistic part to it. They don't want to lose their money. And so they want to prevent things happening that are malice to their customers in prevention for them.
So wouldn't you be able to, okay, let me give an example. I was thinking of this where you were talking as to what to ask you that goes with that. Right now, there is a DuckDuckGo. You know what DuckDuckGo is, right?
Yep.
Okay, so one of my friends like, you should get off Google. Because Google's, you know, going to be totally corrupted. Google's already corrupted. And one reason I like Google is because I like, as long as you stay, I don't mind you being corrupted. Just don't, you know, help everybody else while you're being corrupted. Help everyone, help people. You know, but DuckDuckGo, I'm like, didn't DuckDuckGo have to get permission some sort of way from Google to even become DuckDuckGo? Because isn't Google the number one leader of online search engines, or is it not?
I do believe that Google is still the number one search engine, yes.
So how did DuckDuckGo come about? How did they come in?
So there are a lot of different apps right now for privacy. So when you're on Google, there's all these cookies collected for all the sites that you go, how you access the site. So if you're on your phone, if you're on your tablet, if you're on your computer, where you're located, if you're moving at all. There's many, many, many ways to find out who you are, what you're doing, and why you're doing it. And that's the whole point for what Google does. Google wants to understand you as a human being, whereas DuckDuckGo tries to shield you from all the people, all the companies trying to collect your information and then selling your information to some kind of marketing agency.
Third party.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why a DuckDuckGo would be used and utilized. It's almost like incognito that Google has, but it's for privacy reasons.
For DuckDuckGo is for privacy reasons.
Yes.
So what would somebody gain from using DuckDuckGo and not Google, or can they use both and come up with the same result at the end of the day?
I think I haven't used DuckDuckGo enough. I use Google predominantly. I should use, I may want to use others, but the fact is I've been on computers all my life. My information is already out there. It's already out there. I actually believe that probably Google knows me better than I know myself, like in certain ways, you know, what I would do. And there could be a manipulation to that. And I'm glad it's just a marketing manipulation right now where I might search, maybe where I might go, maybe what I might buy. But it's not there yet to control my next move. And that's really what I get concerned of, is we are psychological creatures that do have certain buttons that would make us want to, it's social engineering, make us go left if we were really wanting to go right. And so that mind control is very possible with what's out there now. And I haven't completely seen that occurring. But that's the kind of information that's out there now. And it's been used to make money off of marketing and making you buy certain things and selling your information. There may be a step later, if there's some unrest in this country, that, you know, politically, we're going to pull you because we know what side you're on. So we're going to pull you away. And I think that's Analytica with Donald Trump on the first round. That was all AI. That's how he was able to really win that first one. That's how the
Shut up.
Yep. That's how. Yep. Yep. It was all information that was taken off of Facebook and other sites that showed people or showed the team at Donald Trump org who was somebody who was in the middle, hadn't actually made up their mind yet. And it's easier to move somebody who's in the middle who hasn't made up their mind, and there's a big portion of those people actually, versus somebody who definitely has already made their mind up one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And so the cost is so much higher and the risk is so much higher for a person who has already made up their mind versus somebody who hasn't. And so that's why these last three elections, you see them going to certain states strategically because they're using data information that you and I have put on the web. So then I know, or Donald Trump knows where to go to pull the most people in.
Wow. That, hey, you know, and that's bright, but didn't, out of all fairness, didn't Obama use the first electronic systems to reach out to people? Was he the first or no?
He to reach out, maybe, but I don't know enough. I know that there was this kind of a scandal, kind of a scheme with Analytica. I believe that they went down after that because of all the information that they were using, and they were getting sued pretty bad. But their measures worked, and he was able to win that race by data,
by pulling data. And that's interesting that you said that the people that were in the middle are the people that can be swayed, because people that have really made up their mind, like, I'm definitely Republican, I'm definitely Democrat. And then the people like, well, you know, I don't know. I personally, I'm neither one of them. I can't stand being boxed in. I personally go for the best candidate. And if the best candidate happens to be Republican, then oh, well, that's who I'm going to be voting for. I mean, that's how I think. I don't, you know, it's like to me saying, oh, well, if my candidate is stupid and don't know nothing and he won't make good decisions, just because I'm a Democrat or Republican, I'm going to vote for them. That I don't like that. To me, it's too narrow thinking. I like to go for who's showing me. I don't care who's in the White House. I've said this before. Show me what you're going to do. Show me what you said you're going to do. That's all I want to hear. I don't want to hear what you said and who doing what or whatever. Just do what you said you're going to do. That's how I go for it. But back to data collection. Yeah. And you're saying all of our information is already out there. I'm pretty sure that any human being right now with any kind of sense would know that. It's got to be out here. Even what about the really remote areas that don't have, like, I have cousins that live in remote areas in Texas and they don't use a computer. They have a cell phone, but they don't use a computer. They really don't. They're not as involved as, say, you and I are, where we're on a public forum and we're going and doing speeches and we're interviewing all that. Well, how is AI and ChatGPT? And then I want to ask you again, how does robotics tie into all of that? How does that work on those situations? What are they drawing from?
So ChatGPT, we'll start there. That's from scouring the internet and taking all the information off the internet and then basically condensing it down in a contextual way where it could find the most critical weights of language. So like when you're typing there will be a sentence, I love Barbies, whatever, right? Well, what is most important in that sentence? Probably love and Barbie. And it will have a weight in that. And it could do, and it could weight all of these different words. And then it looks at a model that tells it what to do. That's ChatGPT. That's NLP. That's neural networks. That's deep language processing. And that's what ChatGPT does right now.
So ChatGPT,
and that's just a company. OpenAI is what they're called.
Oh, well, okay. So it seems to operate more in a neural and following the brainwave pattern of how, you know, what's the next thing with neurological systems. Is that true or no?
Yeah. So it is done by neural networks and transformers. Transformers are basically a way that you have multiple layers of computing nodes networks. That are taking all the information in parallel and then deciphering what is the most important information, and then its output will either have a summary of it or what was your prompt? What did you ask it to do for you? Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's taking in that information and then spitting out probability. It's all probability. All ends up coming up to statistics, mathematics, and probabilities. And the reason that it works now is because we have extremely, our computing has caught up our actual hardware. Like your phone you have in, it is very powerful and complex, and it can compute. I'm on my phone right now. I'm talking through this right now on my phone. That's pretty powerful. I don't need a computer because this is my computer now. And it's in this little tiny form factor called an iPhone. And your iPhone, probably for the last couple of years, almost every piece of your iPhone has AI in it, where you're pushing the buttons, how fast you type, how many pictures you're taking, all the pictures that you have. Everything is data, and that's where big data comes in. And then from that, Apple, and that's why Apple's a massive company. They have so much information. They know what to build next because they know what your patterns are when you're touching things.
What makes it frightening in a way for me, not, again, I'm not afraid of it. I just want to know how to apply it correctly. But it does seem like in a way there are these entities or people servicing these different infrastructures. And then there are the human population, like in a cage almost, where they're like, you know, okay, let's program them to do this. Let's teach them let's take them over here. Let's take, and I don't necessarily know if I like that. So if you're an independent thinker and you're a person that refuses to be programmed, are you saying that ChatGPT and AI can also some kind of way program those people as well, those free radical free thinkers like Einstein and people that were going to be outside of the box, Nikola Tesla, Einstein, Dale Carnegie, Royal Rife. So Royal Rife, his technology about the Rife technology. What about all those kind of people? Are they looking for those kind of people and then singling them out and saying, we want to develop you? Or are they looking and saying, look, the third grader you there down and he's five right now, he ain't gonna be doo-doo, so you might as well get rid of him now. But see that six-year-old right there, he's Nova, great. What's his name? Nova, yeah, he's eight. We like that kid. That kid has got a brain. Let's send data to him and influence him. Is that possible?
Absolutely. Not only is that possible. The government that we have, and probably many governments across the world, have been utilizing these techniques to actually find operatives. So you may not know that the guy next to you is a CIA agent, and he may or she may have never even had to apply to be a CIA operative. But we found you, or they found you, because they know your imprint. They know how smart you are. They know what you do. They have found critical information on you that services their agenda. And so, yes, that is happening. Right now, the way that we live is we live in a capitalistic world, so everything is geared towards money. But it could be geared towards education. It could be geared towards CIA operatives. It could be geared in any directive that you want.
See, for me, I'm smart to be a girl. I get in trouble because I'm a woman, but I think in a lot of ways, I think with my masculine side of my brain, you know, with the very reason in me, let's see exactly where this stuff is going to go. Because I knew years ago, and they have like back in the 50s, Eisenhower put out some kind of financial thing to support extraterrestrial anything to do with technology, future technology. All of these things have been in the program for years. Now, if you're a free thinker and you're kind of progressive thinker, like I think, you know, that's how I feel to think, you're going to be researching these things from 35, 40 years ago. I started looking into these things, but I started looking more into, as you did and other people like us, more into the metaphysical side of things, you know, more into the, yeah, but where is spirit in all of this? Because when Mama Nature gets tired, we're not in charge. I don't care how much AI and robot we have. When she says, when she says something is off the board, it's off the board. You know, the weather changes. We have all of these things that can affect. So let's just say that we're in for some big super geo storm and all the computers go out. Nothing's working. We have no electricity, whatever. How is AI, or how would, if they could, how would they operate in those ways? And do they have anything to do with those fiber optic networks that were built underground about 20, 25 years ago? Because I know some guys that worked on them. They're gone now, but I knew them.
So what exactly is the question?
The question is, given the fiber optic networks that have been stored underground,
okay,
if we had some tropical geostorm, some natural catastrophe happen, would ChatGPT, would AI be able to still operate fully functional with those things going on?
That's a really good question. So, there's a possibility of hardening. It's called hardening your hardware. They do this already for space-hardened hardware. So going up into the atmosphere, there's, you know, the sun's a little bit closer. There's electromagnetic pulses that happen. And so it's critical, mission critical applications, so they need to be hardened. So if it's a hardened infrastructure, which many data centers already have hardened infrastructure, meaning that their boards won't go down if there's that kind of storm. They have backup power and generators.
Okay.
They have all the things that would be necessary, but the output device, your cell phone, your computer, whatever it might be, that might no longer work. Your car, if you have a Tesla, that might not work. Those aren't hardened whatsoever. Okay. So the output device may not work, but a lot of the infrastructure in many places who have already hardened their hardware should and would work in that case.
Isn't that something? So it would work. So, because I've always found it interesting that no matter what natural catastrophe is happening, how do they get, who reports the news? Where are they that they're protected from the storms and the news is still going out and, you know, the world is falling apart? What is going on in those situations? How are they able to do that with everything going on the outside externally?
Satellite.
Okay. It's like this satellite. Okay. Okay. So it's not man. It's a satellite photographing at some distance from the earth, being able to look down upon the earth and then film everything and flash.
Sure.
It back.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You have companies like Planet Labs. That's what they do here in San Francisco. I believe they own part of Google Maps now. It was a pretty big acquisition not so long ago. They own all of Google satellites as well. It's a pretty big company. And that's what they do. Basically, they use artificial intelligence to one application would be, you see all these ships that are going into China and going here and there. Well, we then could tell you, or we're looking at wheat production somewhere. We could tell you how much wheat's going to be produced. So if you wanted to do something in the stock market, you could know information first, knowing that something's about to happen just from the photos that are taken from space. It depends on what you're looking to do. It all has to do with what your application is.
And by application, you mean the various things that we're presented with to use. You know, you want to use this app, that app, Sky Blue, this blue, Google, DuckDuck, all those.
That's the tool. The application would be most, what I'm talking about when an application is the actual application. So you want more customers through your door. that would be an application. You want to see how many ships are coming in and out of China. That would be the application. Okay. Now, the hardware and the software would be the solution.
Okay. 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 That's how you get it out. That's how that's what outputs it. Wow. We could talk a long time because you have a lot I want to ask you, but those are some of the things I didn't get clear on before we, because we were short, we're going into time to end, but I didn't get clear on the differences between robotics, humanoids, and AI.
Okay, no problem. So humanoids, Tesla's making a humanoid right now. And they have been for a while. I worked with a company called SRI, Stanford Research Institution, but it is just SRI now. They're located in Palo Alto. They've been making humanoids for 10 years. Humanoids have been around, and the trickiest part is the ability to walk, the ability to sense, to touch, to manipulate. But no longer is that really a
threat.
No longer is that holding us up, because we have good enough hardware, we have good enough software, and we have good enough measuring and sensing tools to allow a humanoid to act as a humanoid. So they could run around now, they could pick things up, and they could sense now. And a robot, right? A robot could be all kinds of things. It's a mechanism that moves. There's so many types of robots. It could be one that you use with a joystick and you're moving it around. It could be a humanoid. A humanoid is one with two legs that moves around like a human. That's what a humanoid is.
Okay.
And AI would be a layer of software that you put on a robot. So you have certain companies out there that are creating bomb detection robots. Well, you would put a layer of AI that would allow it to sense these threats without you specifically telling it that it's supposed to look for bombs. It would already know that and then go through the processing of finding said bombs wherever it is.
Wow.
And that's software. That'd be a software layer.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Nova. So Nova, we're going to go through your social media tags before we go. You guys, it's time. Love. Ooh, wow. This is my kind of stuff right here. But before we go, we're going to announce again our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, senior real estate and probate specialist, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Again, Kevin Pike, 818-571-1508. We are wonderful to have our guest today, Nova Gray Wolf. Nova, give us your social media tags. Go.
Instagram, Nova Gray Wolf. LinkedIn, Nova Gray Wolf. Facebook, Nova Gray Wolf.
Everything is Nova Gray
and
Wolf.
If you're looking for any type of infrastructure, or even want to talk about some type of AI that you want to put and embed into your systems right now, from your small business or into your enterprise grade type of stuff, you can give us a, you can look us up on www.etg.ai.
Oh, wow. And don't forget about me, my social media text, Osiris_Munir_ThePainterIG. Osiris, Unk Entertainment, 15 minutes of show. Look up any of those. You can find me. Don't forget, I like you. I like you that you're brave and courageous and doing what the hell you want to do despite your obstacles, setbacks, and adversities. And I love you for coming in and supporting me every week. Shout out to Nova again, Nova Gray Wolf with EETG. AI. And again, thanks to LA Talk Radio, Sam Hassan, for always helping us and helping me shine. Don't forget to smile. It works wonders. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye, baby. Bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.